주시 나의 진정이 내 선함이 주 앞에 실상해 줄 것이오. 주라속이 전함과 장주가 두다니 겹수시 자기 진정이 내 선함이 주 앞에 실상해 줄 것이오. 속이 전함과 자주가 유단히 겹수시 나의 진정이 내 소나기 저와 변실상에 주파시오.
I want to show something up, okay? Lama Sofa asked me about a year ago if we could print some books on computer with gold letters to put in the stupa in Bodh Gaya. And we had just gone to Mongolia and we saw that they print books on silver plates, so we said, why don't you try that? And he said, great, you do it, you know. And it took a year. Where's Pran Dayan? She did most of it. Petra did a lot of it. Paula May helped a lot. Robert Chilton, who'll be here this afternoon, worked on it. I think Ellie did some. But I thought you'd like to see the first page. And then a bunch of Lama Sopa's devoted students in my classes stuck some diamonds and rubies in them. So it's really cool. This is the last page of the Diamond Cutter Sutra. Okay. Yeah. It's brass on the inside with coated with silver and gold. And and the idea is that it would last for a few thousand years in the heart of the Maitreya statue that's being built.
Wow.
So you guys have to build the statue, and we'll do the. But, I thought I'd put it on the table over there, and you can gawk at it and handle it. We have a security guard that's sorry. This cloth was made by Gail, and it's Nada and Pelma designed it. I don't know where she is. Right there. It's a Nada and a Dawa and a Dache and a Nima, for those of you who know what it is. Okay. Anyway. Okay, today we're going to go through. Today we're going to go through the preliminaries together. Mostly because I want you to know it doesn't take 2 hours like it took when we went through. So get in whatever meditation position you use now, and we'll talk about that later on today. Okay. Then try to stay very quiet. Okay. Even if you feel like moving, don't forget that if you move, you might bother somebody else's meditation, okay? And it's not going to be very long, like 10 minutes, okay? And just want you to go through the preliminaries. We'll do this every day now. And after the first few times, I'll, like by the third class from now, I'll snap my fingers and you go on to the next preliminary in your mind. And then I'll say what it is and we'll see if they're the same, okay? But for today, I'll give them to you straight out, okay? Supposed to be that you've already cleaned your room, which I'm going to check. No. and set up your altar and made offerings and done your three prostrations, okay? And sat down on your seat in the proper posture. And now we start breathing meditation. So 10 breaths, try to count to 10. Out is half, in is the second half. If your mind wanders in a major way, you have to start over again. Okay. If you can wander and come back before, say, the next quarter or half of a count, we'll let you go. Okay. If you get to 14, come back, start over again. Okay. All right. 10 breaths. All right. If you finish one set of 10, start another set of 10. 2 or 3 sets of 10 is good. Don't try to control your breath. Just let it go naturally. Next step is to take refuge in very specifically one way of taking refuge is to think of a especially difficult problem you have to face today, like a person that you have trouble with or a situation that you have trouble with, and try to think about the emptiness of that situation. And that means if your karma changes, if you keep your vows well, if you keep your morality well, if you don't get angry, if you keep your perfections well, because that thing is empty, it can totally change into something else. So that's an act of refuge. Plan for a difficult person today and think about their emptiness, and then think about how good you're going to be to them so that your karma will change about them. And that's an act of refuge. That's protection. So 10 slow breaths about refuge. Next, bodhicitta. Think of one specific person you know who's either experiencing the result of bad deeds, which is like illness or depression, or who's experiencing the cause of suffering, which is they are angry or they're collecting new bad deeds, and think about that cycle with them, that as they get angry, they say things, and then they have more to be angry about because that creates more situations that are painful for them, and then they react to those with anger, and then more pain comes to them, and then they react to that with anger, and more pain comes to them. And think about any one person you know. We never know for sure if they're not a Buddha who's just emanating it, but you can say that the appearance of this person is that they're creating that kind of suffering for themselves. And then try to feel compassion for a person who is caught in that cycle and probably will die in that cycle. And pick one real person to represent all sentient beings. It's very difficult to meditate on all sentient beings. Pick one person who seems to be embodying the process of perpetuating their own pain. Okay? And then 10 slow breaths about that person and feeling that you wish you could break the cycle for them. Next, you invite a holy being to come and meditate with you, your root lama or some other being, holy being, and visualize them well. Start with the outline, the silhouette, and then fill in the eyes, and then the face, and then the hair, and then the rest of the body. Don't visualize a tanka. Visualize a person who's breathing and warm, and you can smell a... They call it the scent of morality. They have this sweet smell about them, and they love you very much. Now think about their good qualities. Imagine them as perfect. Physically, they're at the prime of life. They say 16 to 20 something. Their body is just really beautiful, made of light, no blood, no guts, and mentally totally omniscient. And especially they are reading your mind all the time. They're constantly finding ways to help you. And then bow down to them in your mind. now offer them a gift, visualized the sky full of flowers or the ocean at sunset or your favorite place in the forest or something like that. If you sometimes do that kind of offering, sometimes when you're in the mood, offer them your practice, some good part of your practice in the past, or think of something today that you'd like to work on, and you'll dedicate it to them and offer that to them, like you'll be kind to the person that upsets you or something and offer that to them now. You start Tsoksak Drupjang, removing negative energy, and think of something specific in the last 24 hours that you said to somebody or some thought that you had, something that you did, and make it very, very, very specific. Don't say, I'm a bad person, or I get jealous sometimes, or something like that. We want a video or a tape recording of the exact words that you said, and run it through your mind a few times, and just appreciate how stupid it is, you know, and actually play the words back, and to think that you actually said those words in your mind about this person, or, you know, aspiring bodhisattva like us said something like that, even in our own thoughts, and be specific. It doesn't have to be big, it can be small. Now for the opposite, rejoicing, something very, very specific that you did right in the last 24 hours. Be very specific and find something and take credit, and it's not pride, it's rejoicing, and it's proper, and the Buddha said to do it, and find something you did right and be happy about it. If you have time in the next 10 breaths, think about His Holiness's virtues or Lama Sopa's virtues or the other great lamas, great deeds that they're doing in the world, and appreciate those. Okay, you can do one or the other. Usually it's good to alternate different days. When you're in the mood, think about Lama Sopa's great deeds, and then when you're in the mood, think about some good thing you did in the last few days. Very specific. It's also very nice to rejoice in the good deeds of normal people who are supposedly they're not Buddhist, but they're just the normal people around you who are very kind and doing great things. next ask for teachings, request that the lamas teach you. And this can extend to your family or your friends or your people at work. It can be the people who teach you scripture or meditation, and it can be the people who really irritate you and teach you patience, and ask them for more teaching. And then when you get it this afternoon, don't complain. Then the last preliminary, think of the sweet teachers you have in your life. They don't have to be Buddhist. Anyone who's helping you, teaching you, and also your good Dharma friends, the ones that you'd like to stay close to because they're such a good example and they help you so much, they support your practice so much. It doesn't have to be necessarily Buddhist. I had people at work who were very fine examples for me, and pray that they stay in your life. Go back to your breath, two or three rounds of 10. And at this point, you can move around a little bit, adjust your. This is a good place when you're meditating to get your back straight again and get your head straight again and scratch that itch that's itching, and then go back in. Okay, ready? That's just a good time generally to adjust your posture. Blow your boogies out. The whole point is by now, the whole point of preliminaries is that by now your mind is very mellow and you've thought all these good thoughts, you've had some time to think about your holy lamas and the great deeds of the great lamas, and you've had time to clean out your conscience, and you've had time to think about the good things you're doing, and by now your mind should be lesurunga, means very, very ready to slide into meditation. Okay. So go back to your breath. If you don't feel like refreshed or invigorated or inspired by now, then the preliminary didn't go too well. And put your mind, we're going to do a jokam, which means a focused meditation, as opposed to a analytical meditation or a reviewing meditation. So focus your mind on the person sitting in front of you and concentrate on their silhouette as if it was a dark room and there was a light behind them and all you see is their outline. So get very clearly in your mind and don't let your mind go to other things. Very clearly see the silhouette of the holy being that you have chosen to sit in front of you. Now focus on their eyes and just get their eyes right. They do have the rest of their body there, but you're focusing on the eyes and see the shape of the eyes, the color of the eyeballs, the pupils, get everything just right, their eyelids, their eyebrows. You're still dimly aware of the outline, but you're focusing on the eyes. Now the rest of the face and the hair, all the colors and shapes. Now the rest of the body and the clothing. Now feel the warmth of their body on yours. You know, you can feel the, if they're with sitting near you, you can feel the warmth coming from them. Now some faint smell from their body, very, very wonderful. Some, pick your favorite smell, gardenia, jasmine, sandalwood. Now give them some motion, their breathing. You can see their body moving slightly, their chest. Their eyes blink once in a while. And if you've put jewels on them, something glitters and shines in your eye every once in a while. And their hair moves a bit. Now try to feel the intense attraction they have for you, the pleasure they have from helping you and loving you and wanting to see you come to their level. Ask them to come and be part of you, and they rise up, and as they rise, their body gets smaller. And then finally they go up a little over your head, and then they move over your head and they come down, and in that process they're turning around until they're facing the same way as you, and they're sitting cross-legged on your head, and they're just small, like 3 inches high, 4 inches high. You could feel the warmth of their body, very, very warm. They have a very, almost supernatural warmth to their body. Then in at the level of your heart, behind your heart, in a tiny little straw-like channel, prepare for them a little chamber. And it's like the pea of the princess and the pea, tiny little pea, and golden light, and a beautiful soft cushion of flower. A huge flower. It fits in a space about an eighth of an inch across, or a little less than a quarter. But in your mind, it's about 6 feet across, because you're inside. And then slowly bring them down into it and feel them sliding down, straight down like an elevator shaft, just in front of your backbone. And you feel them coming down. You feel the warmth coming off their body. And then place them in your heart, and it's warm and it's gold, very beautiful light coming off their body. The light is like spreading throughout your body, and it helps you to act like them and think like them. So try to feel a little bit like you're almost like them. And then imagine that the light goes out of your body and touches other people, and dedicate the good karma. You know, let it, imagine that the good karma of your meditation. People can tell if you had a fight with your wife in the morning, the way you act in the afternoon, and subconsciously they can tell. And then if you spend an hour of your day thinking all these holy thoughts, subconsciously people pick up on it. And pray for that. Pray that they get inspired by that. Okay, then relax and stretch a little bit. Okay. The outline for that practice is basically in Ganadhyayama, it's called the Thousand Angels of the Heaven of Bliss or something like that. People correct me, they say, oh, it's not 1,000, it's 100. The point is, in the commentaries they say the point is that it's a lot. You know, that's the main thing. You're supposed to translate it with a word that means a lot. And that's an outline of that practice. But again, there's one of those dharma corruptions in the world that people get up in the morning and they read their Ganadhyayama out loud and they don't do any of the steps that we just went through. And I hope that it doesn't become that in America. You know what I mean? The point is just to be an outline of what we just did. That's the whole Ganadhyayama. That's the Thousand Angels, or whatever you want to call it. That's the point of that practice. I hope it doesn't become, in our country, just something that people recite in the morning, you know. And then they add 50 more recitations, and then they fill up their 2 hours like that, and then they go to work, you know, without thinking about it. So use it as an outline and not as a... Chanting it doesn't have much effect on your life, you know what I mean? It's some good karma to chant it. You get a little bit of good karma. But it's much, much more if you do what we just did. And it's even better if you do both. Okay, so should do it like that. And I pray that the pioneers of Buddhism in America have to figure out clever ways to prevent it from becoming a dogma or a ritual. You know, I had sponsors come to me and say, did you work on that yet? And I'm like, no, I didn't. You know, how do you keep it alive, and how are you going to teach your children how to do it without it becoming some kind of dogma, or without it becoming just reciting it every morning and not thinking about it, you know? So that's a big challenge for a new Buddhist country, you know? I don't have an answer for that, and we can talk about it. Friday night, I think we're going to have a discussion time, so I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about that, because I didn't have any smart ideas about it. It seems very difficult to stop something from becoming a dogma or a ritual, you know. Even in my own life, it's difficult. So I don't know, even for many thousands of people, how you're going to do that. Alice Ten, can I put your tape recorder here? Okay. I don't think I can walk with it. 2,500 years ago. This is the correct posture that was taught by Lord Buddha. It's supposed to be important for later practice, tantric practice, that you keep this posture or something very similar to it. So if your body has a problem, you know, if you have a bad leg, if you have a bad back, or other problems, you have to adjust the meditation to your body. And it would be very stupid or unwise to force yourself to do something that was painful all the time. And I'm talking in a case where it's not going to get better easily. You know what I mean? If you have a back problem or you have some other problem and you're a lot more comfortable in a chair, for goodness sake, sit in a chair, okay? Because if you sit there and force your body into something that you cannot do, and that, then you'll be concentrating on one thing, how bad it feels. You know what I mean? And your mind won't be able to concentrate on the meditation. The meditation is much more important than how you look to somebody else, okay? So we don't care what you look like. We're all going to close our eyes anyway. So take the position which is most comfortable for you. Having said that, the texts say, if you can take the proper position, your practice of tantra will be much, much more powerful. You know, this position was designed to have your channels in a certain configuration, and it's good for that, and it's important for that. So if the pain in your knees and your back is because you haven't been meditating enough, then you'll get over it. It'll go away. If it's some congenital problem, you know, if you broke your hip or something like that, or if you've always had a bad back, then don't force it. You know, for goodness sake, sit comfortably in a chair and modify it to your body. So that's the first thing that you have to say, okay? Again, it's called Nam Nang Chö Dun. I'll spell it for you. We have to get some more thick markers, okay? I don't know who's the person, but the thin ones are, they're just hard for people to see, okay? But the board is really nice. You've had this a couple times, but this will be the subject of this morning's talk, okay?
Excuse me.
Yeah?
Could you, just as a matter of protocol or method, could you spell out what you write in English?
Yeah.
Because it would facilitate...
Okay, it also helps the video, I think. They asked me to do that. Okay, this is Nam Nang Chö Dun, N-A-M-N-A-N-G. Chö, C-H-U, and Dun, D-U-N, okay? Nam Nang again means Vairochana, one of the five Buddha, one of the Buddhas of the five families of Buddha. When you take a tantric initiation, you have 19 commitments to these five Buddhas, and some of them are to Vairochana, okay? Represents the purity or the absolute perfection of the Buddha's physical form in the form of a person itself. So the purity of the bodies of the Buddha is not a person, but if you took all that purity and made it into the form of a person, that would be Vairochana. So that's a very good one for your physical posture during meditation. That's the point. That's why they call it Vairochana. Okay. Chö means, in this case, like points of posture. If you get into translating, again, chö you have to be. creative about it. It has 11 official meanings. It has probably 50 unofficial meanings. Okay, like eight worldly dharmas is kind of a weird translation. You see what I mean? It's more like the eight worldly thoughts or something. And you, when you reach the word dharma and you're translating, you can't just blindly translate it as dharma. Okay, you have to think about what it means. Sometimes it means all existing things. Sometimes it means a quality. It can mean a bad quality, and sometimes it means the teachings. And so you have to be careful. Dhyan means seven points of the posture, of the meditation posture of Vairochana. Okay. And as we said yesterday, there's going to be eight because you add the breathing practice. Okay. And this is very traditional that you explain it as seven, and then at the end you say, but it's really eight. Okay. First one is say Gangma Kitung. Gangma Kitung. Gangma means legs. Okay. I tell a joke to my students. Tung means to drink, and Gangtung is a name for plants. Okay, because they drink from their Gangbas. Okay. So it's an easy way to remember the word Gangba. Kiltung means cross-legged. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Gangba is K-A-N-G-P-A. Kiltung is K-Y-I-L. T-R-U-N-G. Okay, Kiltung. There's two kinds of Kiltungs. This means cross your legs, by the way. There's two kinds of kiltungs, a full lotus and a half lotus. If you're doing a full lotus, you put your left foot up first on your right thigh, okay? So it would be, you know, this foot up on here, all right? And then after that, you put up the right leg over that, and then you mush it in pretty tight, okay? And couple things to say about a full lotus. I don't advise it for most people because it's so uncomfortable after about 10 minutes that again you start meditating on your feet and you forget to meditate about whatever you're supposed to be meditating about. So I don't suggest it for most people. It is very, very desirable in the higher practices, tantric practices, if you can do it. Okay, when you get to Dzogrim, it's highly desirable if you can do it. So, you know, and maybe you could do it during the preliminaries, and then when you come out of the preliminaries, shift your legs. But get used to it. If you practice it, you can do it. You know, your joints will spread out a little bit, your tendons will spread out a little bit, and you'll be able to do it. But I don't advise trying to do it for an hour at the beginning, and because it'll just cause you pain, and you won't be able to think about what's important. And even in tantric practice, they say if you can't do it, it's okay, and go ahead with a half lotus. Okay, so don't worry about that. If you can do it, it's good. The nice thing about a full lotus is that it forces your back straight, and it also gives you a nice little cup to put your hands in. You see what I mean? Your palms fit right into the parts of the bottom of your feet, the soles right here, and it's very convenient for you. So if you can do it, it's very nice. If you do a half lotus, and I taught this wrong in the past, okay? If you have the notes for this class, it's wrong. I assumed it was left foot up and right foot down. And upon studying many scriptures, they all say the same thing, which is now you reverse it. If you're going to do a half lotus, put your right leg up first and let your left leg stay down on the ground, okay?
Does it make a difference?
A lot of this kind of stuff, you have to follow what the scriptures say because there might be some secret tantric reason that they're not going to tell you from the beginning. So I'd say it probably does make a difference because every scripture I checked, and I checked maybe 15, said the same thing. So maybe there's some reason that we can't talk about or I don't know about, okay? But it seems like that's what they all say. So, you know, I'm very traditional that way, yeah. Yeah, for a full lotus, left leg up first, left foot up first on the right thigh, followed by the right foot up on the left thigh. Okay, cross like that.
And then for a half lotus, reverse it. Put the right foot up first on the left. Tuck it up. If you can't get it up on the left thigh, tuck it up in the joint there. And then let the other one stay down on the ground flat like that. And if you keep practicing, it will get more and more comfortable. Just a practical note. If you start to do a half lotus, they call it in Tibetan like a burr here. The bump on your ankle here, that'll be flat down on the ground, and it'll start to hurt. And the blood will get cut off there, and your leg will start to fall asleep. So it's very important when you meditate that you have a large square cushion under you, about, you know, thick, but not so thick that you're like, but something to keep that burr off the wood or the cement or wherever you are. So really you have to have two parts to your meditation cushion. You know, there should be like a zafu sort of thing under your butt, and then a larger square cushion, so that when your legs are on the floor, the blood will get cut off. If you have a problem with your legs falling asleep quickly, you might try that. In general, in the monastery, if you go to your lama and you say, you know, my legs are falling asleep, he'll say, okay, let the ball sleep, don't worry about it. You know, it tingles for a bit, and just ignore it. And then afterwards, the tingling stops and it's just dead. And don't move. And let it fall asleep. And that's fine. They say, no problem. You know, it doesn't hurt you. It's a little disconcerting. But it's actually better later. If you're completely dead, you can't hurt anything. Nothing hurts after that. So the only trick is don't get up quickly. You know what I mean? I met Professor Thurman in New York the first time, and he had a cast on. And I was like, what happened? He said, well, I just jumped up after the phone rang, you know. And his leg was asleep, and he broke his ankle, you know. So don't do that. All right, I mean, get up slowly. Be careful that you get up slowly, okay? That's about all on the... If you choose to do a half lotus, which I advise you to do, it means the two soles of your feet won't be available to be that nice cup for your hands. You see what I mean? They'll just be half of a cup, and it'll be down lower. You can experiment with yourself. So it's very good to take a little piece of cloth with you and roll it up and put it on your lap, so that when you cup your hands, it's up high enough, okay? As if you were in a full lotus, okay? So if you do a half lotus, you'll find that your hands are down around here. And then your back tends to bend, okay? So it's good to roll up a little piece of cloth, and it'll take your hands up to here. They say in many scriptures that if you press the thumbs in, it would touch your belly button. Now, different people have different bodies, okay? Some belly buttons are up here, some are down there, you know, okay? So don't be upset if you, you know, the point is that when your back is straight, if you were in a full lotus, for most people, that would be the top of the thumbs would be very close to your navel, okay? And there are some practices in the higher teachings where you have to press into your navel, So you want to try to get used to that now, okay? It's also very good then that your elbows are away from your body and heat doesn't build up in your body. It's like a vent here. And that's important later when your tummo gets really good. You need some air conditioning. You need some ventilation there. Seriously, if you're like this, it builds up too much heat in your body. And heat makes you sleepy. Dangerous, okay? So try to... You know, get in your position and then move your elbows forward a little bit, okay? That also helps keep your back straight. Then you have sort of like a tripod holding up your back, okay? And that's useful, okay? So try to keep your elbows away from your body, okay? Second quality. I'll say it out for people who can't see it. It's mik, M-I-K. Miye. M-I-Y-E, and then Misum, M-I-S-U-M. Say, Mik,
Miye,
Misum. Okay. Mik means your eyes. Okay? Mik. In Tibetan, mostly for body parts, there's a common word and an honorific word. Like the honorific is Chen, like in Chen Rei Sik. Loving eyes. The one who looks with loving eyes. Okay? So the non-honorific is Mik. Okay? Mi means not. Mi Ye means don't open them too wide, like all the way open. Misun means don't shut them all the way. Okay? Misun means don't shut them all the way. Now that you have to talk about. People ask me, should I open my eyes or not? You know what I mean? And there's advantages to both and disadvantages to both, and you have to do what fits your body. Meditation posture is a very personal thing. Everybody's body is different. And you have to, Jetsun Kapa, after saying all this, says, by the way, do whatever fits your body. Okay? And he says, only by meditating over and over again will you discover the best combination for yourself, for your own body and your own mind. And you have to do that. You have to experiment and find what's most comfortable for you. If you keep your eyes totally closed, it's okay. You can do that. The disadvantage is that your body for 30, 40, 50 years has been trained that when you close the eyes, it's supposed to go to sleep. So it can be really, I mean, you've got, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of conditioning to go to sleep after your eyes are closed. So it might be difficult to break that. And you might find that you get a little drowsy, okay? On the other hand, closing your eyes allows you to concentrate a lot better. And you don't get, your eyes don't get distracted. You see what I mean? So you have to find what's better for you. The scripture also says you shouldn't keep them wide open. I mean, like that. And in that case, you'd start to look around the room, and anytime something moves, your eye will be caught, and you'll be distracted, okay? Ideal, if it's comfortable, okay, is like that. It's like sort of cracked open, like that, okay? And that's why you see those Buddha eyes, you know, it's kind of like that. So it's kind of like somebody who's a little drunk or something, and they're okay. A lot of scriptures say focus on the tip of your nose, and I've met a lot of Americans who are like cross-eyed. If you know Tibetan well, what the book says is focus on the plane of your nose. You see what I mean? Around here. It doesn't mean cross your eyes and focus on the tip of your nose, okay? And that's a mistranslation. And I don't know how many Americans have suffered because of it, you know? The point is that if you had a piece of glass and you put it here, touching your nose, then your eyes should be focused right around here. That means you won't be able to see anything. You see what I mean? And you know how to do this because when you're in a real good daydream about that guy or that girl, you know, you're like, you know, and your eyes aren't focused on anything. You see, I mean, the point is that your eyes are focusing right here. If the pen was there, you would see it. And if it wasn't there, you would just be, like, spacing out, okay? It's like when you're really, really listening to some good music and you're like, you know, and you're not focusing your eyes on anything. So the idea is not to focus your eyes. And best if you can keep them, like, half down, okay? This is also important in later practices. You know, in some later practices, you're keeping your eyes up like that, okay? And that comes later. But this is like a thing like that. It's a common thing for people who, when they crack their eyes open, and they lower their head. You know what I mean? And that's a bad thing. You shouldn't do that, okay? Your head shouldn't be like that. As we go on through these classes, I'll start walking around doing meditation, and I'll, you know, hit you on the chin. That means get your head up, okay? All right? You shouldn't be like that. That's very bad for your channels around the neck area. And it shouldn't be too, it should be just straight, okay? So it's hard, and you have to practice, but you're like a soldier. You know, your head is, it's not like that, and it's not like that. It's straight, but your eyes are down like that, okay? And your eyelids are down a little bit like that, okay? And that's ideal if you can do that. there's an instruction in the Tibetan scriptures that if you're meditating in front of your altar, which is very common, and most Americans just take a small coffee table or a nightstand and they make their altar off of that, that the cloth in front of you should be a plain color. Shouldn't be like checkered or have a design on it or anything like that. In other words, another part of the instruction about your eyes is that there shouldn't be anything in your field of vision that would distract you. Magazines, books are very distracting. You see, I mean, your mind, especially in long retreats, your eyes will get magnetized. You know, they go directly if there's some kind of writing or some kind of picture or some kind of design, and you have to get them all out of the room, out of your meditation space, out of your field of vision. Okay, you can put all your Dharma books in the back, okay? And there shouldn't be anything in your field of vision except plain color, some kind of plain, solid color, okay? Otherwise, your eye will tend to, if you crack your eyes open, they'll tend to catch on that. If you find yourself getting too distracted, close them. If you find yourself getting too sleepy, open them. You see what I mean? And you can use that as a control valve for your sleepiness, okay? It helps. It helps a little bit, okay? That's about all on the ice. The English letters here are Lu, L-U, Trangbo, D-R-A-N-G, P-O-R, and then Sang, S-A-N-G. Say Lu, Trangbo, Sang. Lu, Trangbo, Sang. Lu means your body, but here it means your torso, and specifically your back. Okay. It means your back here. Trangbo means very straight. Sang means make it straight. Okay, straighten it up. Straighten up your back is Vairochana meditation posture point number 3. Okay. In the scriptures they say the geltsik, which means your vertebrae, should be like a stack of coins stacked on each other. And there's a place, again, a lot of these things can only, you will only become aware of them if you meditate a lot. You know, I can describe them, but you don't know what I'm talking about until you meditate a lot. But you reach a kind of place when you meditate where it feels just right. It feels like each one is stacked on the other one, and you can feel it. You know, it feels very centered and very grounded. And it's like trying to balance a bunch of coins, and then finally you get them just right. You know, all the rims lined up, and it's just got this solidity, and there's a, you'll feel it when you hit it, and you won't hit it if you don't try a lot. And then you'll just become, you'll say, oh my gosh, it feels just right. You know, each vertebrae is on, you know, technically your vertebrae go like that or whatever, but it'll feel like it's a straight stack of coins. It'll feel very grounded. And you have to experiment until you find that place. I found that typically, the whole torso is a little bit too tilted back. And if you try, I mean, just a suggestion, you know, tilt it up straight, just a touch. Tilt it forward just a touch. It forces your back to get straight. So you're like this, right? Most people tilt a little too far back, and then they curve their shoulders down. And then the airs can't get through your channels, okay? So the back should be straight, and I suggest the scriptures say tilt forward just a tiny, tiny touch without bending. You see what I mean? The whole thing is straight and it tilts forward just a touch. They say something like if a teardrop came off your face that it would drop in your belly button. I don't know. But the whole, try it sometime. Typically for Americans, they lean back a bit too much and then they have to bend their shoulders. And try straightening up and then going forward just a bit. And I found that when you get into deep meditation, it's distracting to straighten up. You don't want to move even enough to straighten up. But if you just slightly pivot off your hips, you know, come forward just a bit, you straighten up automatically. So you got to try it, okay? And you'll know what I'm talking about. But try not to get into this thing where your back is bent like this, and where you know like that, where your the channels get cut off at your shoulders and at your neck, okay? The whole thing has to be like a soldier, okay? You'll find that when you're very intent on a movie, the expression in English, sitting on the edge of your seat, your interest in the movie straightens out your back. You'll notice that, and that's a channel thing. That's a wind thing, you see? Your concentration is best, even in a movie, when your back is straight. And you'll find a big connection between having a straight back and being able to concentrate well. And there's a tantric grounding for that. You know, the winds are able to move well, and therefore the mind is able to move well. So it's just a good practice all day long, if you're going to be a meditator, to keep your back straight, okay, as much as you can. Some kinds of exercises are really good for that. And I think a gentle, non-vain exercise is very good for that. Yoga is good. Tai Chi or Aikido or things like that are good. Dancing is very good. So something that strengthens your back is good. And I'm not talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger or something. You don't have to do that. I'm talking about mild, consistent 15 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day of some kind of thing to strengthen your back. Your meditation will get much, much better. You know, I'm not an exercise freak. I think you can really waste your time if you get into it too much. But it's very important that your body be strong and that your back be strong. Too much muscle, I think, gets in the way sometimes. I think, so you have to find something that makes your back strong, but also supple and light. You see what I mean? So try that. It's very good for you if you can do that. You have to watch your diet also. If your weight is not commensurate with your body, then you'll have a hard time keeping your back straight. So that's important. And I don't, you know, there's this obsession in America with looking right and stuff like that. I'm not talking about that. That's very dangerous and very distracting. To worry about your physical appearance is very bad for your spiritual life. But if your weight fits your frame, you'll be able to meditate a lot better. So just in the interest of meditation, try to control how much you eat and what kinds of thing you eat, because it'll disturb your meditation. Okay, if your tummy is smaller and you're light, then the meditation is much, much, much more powerful, much better. Okay, so just for that reason, it's worth it to try, you know, to let, you know, start drinking more, eating less, like that. You know, maybe eat two times a day instead of three times a day, something like that. The body, monks are traditionally not allowed to eat after noon, or if we have to, then we're still encouraged only to eat twice a day, monks and nuns. And I, you know, they taught me that in the monastery. I did it since, you know, 15 years or something. And it doesn't affect your health at all. You don't need it. You know, I don't know why we eat three meals a day. You don't need it. You really don't need it, you know. Twice a day is fine. And I haven't had any physical problems from it or anything. I think even the opposite is that you feel light, you feel healthy, and I don't think you need three. You know, if you need a little snack, if you get lightheaded or something, even as a monk or a nun who has taken vows not to eat after noon, you're encouraged to eat, you know. Like, it's not like some kind of a, how to say, in Buddhism, the rules are meant to serve the people and not the people to serve the rules. You know what I mean? So if you get lightheaded or you had a rough day at work or, you know, or you're feeling tired or in low energy, okay, drink something, eat something. You know what I mean? But let your food be fuel for your body and only use food when you have to. You know what I mean? Use it to serve your body. And if you feel a little lightheaded, eat something. And then you'll be able to meditate better. Okay. Although not before you meditate. You should schedule it, you know. You cannot meditate with food in your belly. Forget it. Okay. Just forget it. Impossible. All the texts say that, especially the tantric texts. They're very clear. They say, you know, don't do that. Okay. I I can't control my eating. You know, someone gives me a box of a tin of ginger cookies like Gail did, I'll eat the whole thing, you know. So what I do is I get my students to help me control myself, and I keep them close to me. And we even share our food and like that. So we kind of have this informal deal. We don't eat unless we eat together. And we give each other the food, and we help each other. And you might try to find a friend like that. I honestly, if you give me a box of cookies, I'll eat the whole thing. And I, you know, I'm just a normal American, you know. So it's good to have some friends that that are very close to you, eat together with them, and then help each other. You know what I mean? And make faces when they start on their 10th cookie, you know. And I found that to be very good, you know. You know, have someone close to you help you eat. And I'm not being, it's an important thing. You know, when you're meditating, it becomes an important thing. It sounds silly, you know, you need someone to help you eat or something like that, but it works. It really does work, okay? This is the importance of having some good Dharma friends, you know what I mean? And being around them all the time. You know, having them close to you, being in close contact with Dharma friends is that you can't keep your awareness, sheshin, all day long. It's impossible. You're going to have an hour when you're very vulnerable to a cookie attack. You know, and that's when it's important to have some Dharma friends around, you know, who can stare at you while you're eating the box of cookies. You know, and then you'll feel embarrassed, you know, especially if you're the Lama, you know. Okay. Say Chakpa, Nyamba. Chakpa, Nyamba. Chakpa refers to your shoulders, okay? Nyamba means on an even plane. We had Nyamshak yesterday, meaning meditation, equilibrium. What was that equal between what and what? Yeah, dullness and agitation. I'm going to keep talking about that over and over again, you know? Over here is dullness. No, over here is agitation. Dullness being the state brought on by food, lack of sleep, okay, warmth of the room, which we'll experience this afternoon, and agitation being, for me, and I bet it's the same for most of you, thinking about what I'm going to do today or tomorrow, you know, like plans for my work. And, you know, you're encouraged in America ever since you were a kid to plan ahead and think about your day, and this is a good thing. But in meditation, it's an enemy. It's a deadly enemy. You know, you can't plan your day or your life during meditation. I don't know how many meditators I've met, including myself, who use their one-month retreats to plan their next business venture. You know, they come out of retreat and they start talking to you about this new business idea they had, and you're like, what were you doing during your retreat? You know? Okay. You want to stay somewhere here, right in the middle. That's Nyamba. And there's this huge enemy who lives right here, right off of equilibrium on the dull side. What is it? Chingwa Chamo. Say Chingwa
Chamo.
Subtle dullness. Spacing out, sitting perfectly, silent. For 2 hours, not twitching a muscle, and holding the object, but no ngar. Say ngar.
Ngar.
Ngar means the quality in a knife when it's tempered. It's the temper of a knife, and it's used in meditation. It means the vividness of the meditation, or the, you know what I mean? The, I don't know what you want to call it. I call it gnar because I don't know any word in English. But it's like subtle, in subtle dullness, you're fixed on the object, fine. You're holding the object in a loose way and a very fuzzy way. And there's no guts to your meditation. There's no vroom to your meditation, you know. It's dull and it's intensity, yeah. There's no intensity to your meditation, okay. And you don't want to live there. And I suspect that most Americans who are able to sit for 2 hours are living right here, you know, in some kind of dull, subtle dullness. Subtle meaning difficult to detect in yourself. You think you're doing fine, okay? We're going to keep picking on him Jetsun Kapa's favorite subject in meditation scriptures is he keeps picking on this poor guy. Subtle dullness. He hates him. He's saying all the Tibetans who learn to meditate are living here in this subtle dullness, and they're wasting their lives there, spacing out. Okay. So Tapa Nyama. Okay, go back to that kind of equal. Tapa Nyama means equal shoulders, and this means that you don't meditate like this with one shoulder up higher. Okay, like there's a horizontal plane is going good. So the vertical plane slightly tilted forward from the waist, and then the horizontal plane, the two shoulders are totally equal. Okay, I have some students who, as the meditation gets longer and longer, they start, you know, at the end they're like that, you know. So try to see. I carry this heavy bag around all the time, so when I meditate, I'm like that. You know? You have to watch that. Okay. I'd like to take a break there. And when you come back, we'll finish the other 3.5. Okay? All right. Guru Ranamandana Kamayataya. I learned to take these off during the break, you know, after a few embarrassing incidents. Okay. The English letters here say G-O, M-I-T-O, M-I-M-E-N. Say go,
go.
Mito,
mimen.
Mimen. Go,
go,
mito,
mimen.
Mimen. Go means your head, okay? Me means not. Toe means tilted up. Okay? Mi men means not tilted down. So you got all this planes here, right? Your shoulder plane is, you know, horizontally straight. Your back plane is erect and slightly tilted forward from the waist. Okay? And the plane of your head is straight. Okay, if you had sticks coming out of your eyes, you know, it would be right like this. And the most common mistake I see is people tilting their head down, and every 10 minutes that goes by, there's like 5 more degrees, you know. And then towards the end, they're like, okay, so you have to be careful. And it's also an error to tilt the head back. Supposedly, you know, in the winds and channels, if you tilt your head back, you start to get more guppa or distracted, agitation. And if you tilt the head down, you start to get dullness. And, you know, when I look out at a group of people meditating, it often seems like people's head starts to tilt down more and more. Okay, so try to watch out for that. It'll make you sleepy. Okay. It's just totally like a soldier, you know, like a Marine, and your head's straight like that. And then the trick is to get your eyes down without going like that, you know what I mean? So it's unnatural, it's not like normal, but you're like that, and you're looking down like that. And you're not crossing your eyes and focusing on the tip of your nose, okay? You're loosely focusing your eyes about 6 inches away from your face on nothing, okay? So you're like that. And you have to practice that. Okay, it's like that, and then your eyelids come down a bit, like that. Okay. People asked me 2 questions during the break that maybe you'd like to hear. Somebody said, "I'm sitting with a friend. One of us heard you say you should eat before you meditate, and one of us heard you say you shouldn't eat before you meditate. You should not eat before you meditate." I'd say it's like swimming. You know, like when you're growing up, and they said don't go swimming within an hour and a half after you eat. It's because of the same thing. I mean, your stomach needs all the blood. It goes from your head into your stomach, you know. So I'd say an hour and a half. Ideal is to finish your meditation before you eat, okay, in the morning. You have to hydrate your body, and you do need some calories to meditate. It's good to have some juice or some tea or something like that. I found coffee is probably too strong for most people before meditation, although some of us need it on certain days. And then when I say certain days, I'm not being facetious. You have to modify your meditation to fit your physical condition. You know, if you've been up all night, you might have to do that. You know, drastic means for drastic problems. So it's good to have some kind of juice or something like that. In general, although I'm not a health food freak, I could care less about all that. But I do agree that in general, if you drink a lot of milk products, it builds up phlegm in your body, and it makes it more difficult to meditate. You get some kind of congestion here. Most people. Now, some people's bodies are different, and they should drink milk before meditating. Okay, it depends on your body. But that's a general. Especially when you do long retreats, you might find that it's better not to drink too much milk. And I think if you've done long retreats, you'll see that slowly you wean yourself off of coffee and tea, and then onto herbal teas, and then onto water. And at some point, you drop the milk, and you can start soy milk or something like that. Okay, in moderation, because soy is also a bean, and we'll talk about that. Somebody else asked me, hey, all the preliminaries don't go before the meditation, so you can't call them all preliminaries. I said, technically that's correct, okay? As you noticed this morning, the dedication was last. And the gyung nyen de, bringing them into you and mixing their mind with your mind and their heart with your heart, that came just before that. And that's fine. You can do it that way. So they're technically, yeah, they're not all preliminaries. Some of them come afterwards. But they're just called the six preliminary practices. So that's something in the debate ground. When you're in Sarah Monastery, you know, like, you get really excited. You say, now I can screw somebody up in the debate ground, you know. I'll say, if it's a Georgia, if it's a preliminary, it comes before, right? And the guy will say, yeah, preliminary means come before. And you say, what about dedication? Does it come before? And the guy says, no. And you say, well, you don't do six preliminaries, you do five, don't you? And you say, no, so five is six, right? And, you know, and then, you know, whoa, okay. The idea in debate is to get the guy to a point where he has to say five and six. And then everybody's roaring, and then you win, okay? The English letters here say so, S-O, chu, C-H-U, rang, R-A-N-G, and then Luke, L-U-K, okay? We didn't spill the glass of water yet, but we'll do that. I think we spilled everything else. Say, Sochu, Rangluk. Sochu, Rangluk. So means your teeth, okay? Chu means your lips, okay? Rangluk, those of you who studied logic, you know Rangluk means the system that we're following at that moment in a debate. But in meditation, Rang Luk means leave them alone. Let them do their own thing. Okay? Rang Luk means just however your teeth and lips normally hang out, let them hang out that way. Okay? Some of us have longer ones, some of us have shorter ones. Okay? You know, so what it means is, and this is important, although it might not seem important. All these little details are important. You can have a much more a satisfying meditation if you learn all this stuff. The corners of your mouth, some people tend to tighten the corners of the mouth. You watch them meditate and they're like grimacing a bit, like scowling. They look like they're scowling, you know what I mean? Okay, and that's distracting. That distracts you. There's a little tightness here. So the idea is to make it loose, you know? Everything is loose and just very, very natural for you. However your mouth is normally hanging out, leave it. They say don't open your mouth. Don't leave your mouth open. And they say don't breathe through your mouth. They say breathe through your nose. And then there's this little footnote, you know. If your nose is stuffed up, you can breathe through your mouth rather than go unconscious, okay? But generally it's going to dry out your throat and then you'll be swallowing a lot. And if you swallow a lot during deep meditation, it becomes very distracting. So if you leave your lips very, very loose, here is all, you know, like rubber, very loose. And sometimes before I meditate, I like to, you know, get it loose and then let it meditate. It'll be slightly loose here. It won't be open, but it might be cracked a bit. And if you take the effort to purse your lips like that, that's also a distraction when you get into deep meditation. So it's just totally loose and natural. However your teeth naturally hang, if you have them or not, let them stay that way. Okay? No, don't fool around and check your mouth as you go into deep meditation to make sure it's not tight, that your lips are not tight, especially here in the corners. Okay? Say, Che, Yasu, Tung. Che, Yasu, Tung. Che means your tongue. You know, what are you supposed to do with your tongue? Okay? Yaso means the upper part of your mouth, like your palate. Yeah? Okay, up towards your front, right here. Okay? And Tung means leave it there. You know, park it up so it's lightly touching the top of your mouth. So your mouth is closed. You're not breathing to your mouth. And your tongue is very comfortably tucked right behind your front teeth in a very natural position. Okay? You don't have to like, you know, you don't have to push anything. Just park it right there. They say if you meditate with your tongue down away from the palate, you get dried out. Your mouth will get dried out faster. So if your tongue is touching your palate behind your front teeth, then the mouth will stay wet, and then you won't be swallowing. When you get into deep meditation, swallowing sounds like a big truck going by. You know what I mean? And it's very distracting. So you want to experiment with your mouth in such a way that by keeping the tongue lightly parked up in the front top of your mouth behind your front teeth, that it keeps some kind of pool of water in your mouth and you don't have to swallow so often. Okay, you will have to swallow from time to time, but it's very, very distracting when you get into deep meditation. Okay. How many meditation posture points? Oh, so it's the 8 points of Vajrayana, right? Who said yes? This is like a debate, you know. They play with this. It's not stupid, you know. It's not just sophistry. It's important. You know, in a monastery, you'd go up now after class, you'd eat something light, you'd go up in the meadow and you'd start, give me the 7, you know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What's number 4? What's number 6? What's the second part, number 5? You know, and the guy has to shoot it back to you like a gun, you know, and like that. And you say, oh, there's 7, right? And he says, no, 8. He says, so Vajrayana has 8. You say, no, Vajrayana has 7. So it's not 7, there's 8. It's not 8, there's 7, right? And the guy says, well, you add 1, okay? So what do you add? Breathing. Yeah, breathing, okay. We'll call it 8, quotation, okay. That way we don't get in a debate with anybody. Ook. The long form is, by the way, the English here is UK, okay? Say ook. Jungook. Ook. Jungook. This is straight from the Abhidhamma Kosha, Vasubandhu, 17 centuries ago, 16 and a half. Ook means breathing, just not quite like that. And Jungook means going in and out, your breath coming in and out, okay? And again, this is not a... You don't want to spend your spiritual life watching your breath, okay? You want to go on to some more profound objects like emptiness or your lama's sweet face or something like that. You see what I mean? Or the Buddha. Or debating with yourself whether or not you're really going to die before you finish all this. You see what I mean? Those are real meditations. And again, the purpose of breath meditation is simply to get your mind into neutral, so that you can move on to the real goal of your meditation, okay? And again, you're counting 10 breaths. There are some systems where you count 7, and there are different systems. In Tantra, there are 9, 7, sometimes 10, and there are different practices with different emphasis, sometimes 3 sets of 3, all different kinds. But the most common and the one that we should be doing at the beginning is 10 breaths. Out counts as the first half, in counts as the second half. without getting distracted to another object. If someone slams a door and it doesn't mess up your counting, you don't have to go back to one. Okay? If someone slams a door and you start thinking about the door of your refrigerator and those cookies I had in there, and I wonder if there's any left, how many students were in there this morning, you know, and then you have to start over, because by then you've lost count, all right? So you have to make a distinction. Otherwise, you'll go on, you'll never get past two. You know what I mean? It's impossible. So 10 breaths like that. I have personally found that 10 is not enough. Like, I do two or three sets of 10 to get my mind parked. You know, you can finish 10 breaths in, I don't know, a minute or two, and it's not enough for me to get my mind from my office to my meditation. You know what I mean? So I personally found that two or three sets of 10 is good. I use the breathing to time my preliminaries. You know, and the way we went through it this morning was 10 breaths for each preliminary. Somebody asked me, well, how can you concentrate on, you know, like the best thing you did in the last 24 hours and count at the same time? You know, you go back and forth, you know, and you get good at it. You can start to sense what 10 breaths is. You know what I mean? And to me, that keeps your, it keeps your preliminaries going at about the right pace. It's very important to pace your meditation. Americans tend to go too long on the preliminaries, and then your attention span is already starting to crumble by the time you get to the meditation. So it's important to move through the preliminaries in a careful but expeditious way, and then go right on to the meditation before an hour, before 45 minutes has gone by. You know what I mean? So like 10 minutes on the preliminaries, 10 breaths on each preliminary. Do them sweet and short, and then move on into the meditation. If you're doing retreat, that's a different story. Okay, retreat is a whole another thing. We're going to talk about meditating in retreat this afternoon. Okay. Last thing about the position, and then we can stop for today, for this morning, is I'd like to talk a little bit about the seat, okay, meditation seat. This is crucial, okay, the seat is crucial, very important. And you see all kinds of meditation seats around. You know, there's a guy in New Jersey that's been sitting 20 years on this 2x4, and I just wince every time I see it. And then other people swear by these Zafu things, you know. And some of them, I can't balance on it. You know, I'm like, whoa, you know. And then some people swear by a softer cushion, like a beanbag thing that's a little like a long thing. And then all different things. Kieran has his own system. Where is he? You know, basically, I'll tell you what the scriptures say. It should be like something under your... under you that aerates, you know, you know, like not slick, like vinyl or something that you'd get sweaty on it or something. Like cotton is good. In the scripture, cotton is ideal. I think it might be good rather than like some synthetic fibers or something like that. I think there's an energy to natural materials. And also, it breathes, and that's important. Shouldn't use something that's that gets sweaty or, you know, like vinyl or something like that. And then you can wash it, you know, something you can take the cover off and wash it. The only thing that scripture says that you must have is that the back of the seat is higher than the front of the seat, so that the base of your backbone is forced up a little bit, you know, so the back of your rear end is a little bit higher up. And the scripture is very clear about that, that the back of the seat should be higher than the front of the seat. Personally, again, this is a personal thing, and I'm not saying that a 2x4 might not be the right thing for you. It might be the right thing for you, but you have to experiment with what's right for you. And I encourage you to experiment. You know, you're in a group now with like 100, 200 people. If you see a seat, you know, say, hey, can I try your seat? You know, and what's funny is I know people that have used the same seat for years and then didn't ever try another one, and then they try the other one, and suddenly they realize that's the one they should have had all along. You know what I mean? So don't be shy, you know. Ask people, let me try out your seat, and find one that you like, you know. I personally like the barley ones, the Zafus, and I take out a quarter of the barley because they're too tight for me. If they're tight, then you're like having a balancing problem, and I'm like swaying from... So I like to take out some of the barley, and then I conform it to my rear end, such as it is. And get the back up a little higher. You know, you can get it before you sit on it, you push the barley up towards the back, and then you get down on it before the barley slides back, you know. And that way your back is forced, the back of your rear end is forced up higher than the front. Also, the cushion underneath your ankles is important. You know, it should be, those big square ones are fine. And something to keep your ankles up off the ground so that you don't get the blood cut off. And it starts to hurt at that bone where the bone sticks out, okay? And that's very, very important. Don't be lazy about your seat. Don't be one of these people that says, oh, you know, I'll just use whatever they have when I get there, you know. If you're going to get serious about seeing emptiness, if you're going to get serious about not dying, okay, which becomes more interesting the older you get, okay? Okay. For God's sake, you know, take a little effort and find the right meditation cushion, you know. Make a little effort. Try out different. This is a great opportunity this week. You're going to see all kinds of weird cushions. You find the one for you, and then go get one, and then get married to this cushion. You know what I mean? Like, everywhere you go, this cushion goes with you. You know, I have students that say, I got all this baggage, you know, I don't want to take it with me. I'll just use a couch cushion or something. I say, no, this becomes part of your life, you know. This becomes one of your accoutrements, you know. You got to make room for it wherever you go, you know. You got to have it with you wherever you go. Don't ever spend a day without it. You have your cushion with you. You have your other little mat that goes with you. And you can use those little thin foam ones and fold them up or something. It's no problem. And then for a while, it's good to have an alarm clock, okay? Get one of those little ones that doesn't make any tick, 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 which will drive you crazy if you're meditating, okay? Get one that you can use. And then what happens is that a certain percentage of your mind doesn't have to remember to get up. You see what I mean? You know it's going to go off, so you don't have to worry about what time it is, you know? Sometimes I set it wrong, and I set it for p.m. instead of a.m., and about an hour and a half later, I'm like starting to glance at the clock, you know? You know? So I warn you to be careful with that. But if you're going to get serious, if you're a serious Buddhist, you've got to have your cushion with you all the time. You have your alarm clock with you all the time, okay? And then some kind of cloth that if you're doing a half lotus, something to keep on your lap to keep your hands up high enough to where they're supposed to be, okay? That's important. I like to use some kind of holy cloth, you know, like I go to Lama Sopa and say, you know, you don't have an extra shirt that you don't need anymore or anything. Yeah. And then you get all that vibrations from that Lama, you know, it's nice to have that. I think one thing I didn't cover is the hands, okay? There are different postures for the hands in different parts of meditation. There are tantric meditations where you're supposed to have your hands on your knees and doing that. But the standard is left hand down first, palm up, and then right hand on top of that. And then connect the two thumbs like that. For years, I did it kind of wrong, and they kept flopping down, you know, and I thought I was a really bad person. My thumbs aren't flopping down, you know. Probably Tsongkhapa would be disappointed with me, you know. And don't worry about it, okay? What I found later was if you kind of get the hands a little spread apart and go like that, or even like that, or like that, experiment with it, you know. Sometimes to put them in a little bit like that. I found that if you put the elbows out a little bit, push the elbows forward, then it's easier to keep this, you know. And it also prevents heat from building up here if you meditate too long. So then you don't get sleepy. So it also gives you something to lean on when you're getting tired. Okay, you've got this support here. And that's very useful. So experiment with the best way to keep your hands. It's tradition to keep them this way until you get to other practices. So, you know, don't confuse the two practices. There is a practice where you keep them like that. There is a practice where you keep them like that. There is a practice where you keep them like that. But for your standard meditation, keep it like that, okay? It's generally good to decide what kind of Buddhism you're going to follow and follow it strictly and don't mix them up. You see what I mean? It's not that one tradition is better than another. You have to find the tradition that fits you. And it may be Zen, and it may be Vipassana, and it may be Burmese, and it may be Chinese, and it may be Pure Land, and it may be Tibetan, and it may be Kagyu, or Nyingma, or Sakya, or Duglupa. Find the one that fits you. It's like, find the one that fits your body, and your mind, and your personality. That's why they all exist. And Lord Buddha has brought them all into the world so that you can find the one that fits you best. And that's why they exist. But if you decide to follow one of them, then follow it purely and don't mix things up.
Okay, keep your lineage pure, you know. So if you decide to follow this lineage, you know, keep them like that, all right? Okay, and there are reasons, because if you get, as the years go by in this lineage, the lamas will start to teach you tantra. And then you'll be all ready, because your posture will be the correct one for tantra. You'll already be used to it for several years. And then it will be much easier for you to follow those practices. So it's not just like some arbitrary thing. If you're going to follow it this way, do it the right way and for this lineage. And then as you get higher in this lineage, then everything is preparation for later, and you're already used to it. You know, you're already used to sitting like that. I found that the meditation goes much better if I'm very aware of keeping my hands loose here. You know what I mean? Like if you're like tight, there's some kind of tightness is bad. You know, make sure your body's loose and comfortable. Comfort is very, very important. The meditation should be comfortable for you, okay? It's no virtue to torture your body. In fact, it's a wrong view. It's one of the five wrong views in Buddhism, to hurt yourself in the name of Buddhism. You know what I mean? You don't get any points for doing that, okay? You have to be comfortable so that your mind is able to float off to your meditation object. You're basically parking your body so you can ignore it for a while, okay? And that's the whole goal of meditation, is to park your body and leave it. No sight, sound, taste, smells, touches. You're leaving your body. And this is just like the most convenient way to leave your body. And if you take this particular posture, the channels are all arranged perfect. And if the channels are arranged perfectly, then the mind is moving in the channels. As the air and the mind are in tandem, they move together. And the airs are moving very, very nicely, very smoothly. And then the mind, as goes the air, so goes the mind, because they're always linked. So if you're in a good posture, then your ability to meditate is much, much stronger. And that becomes very important later when you study the higher tantric teachings, okay? That's it. We'll do some prayers and try not to eat too much at lunchtime. I would even just like take a snack, and then, you know, if you're a little hungry, you can concentrate better. And then in the evening, I told my students when we got back to the room last night, I said, now I can just pig out, because we don't have any evening class. You know, we don't have to have any mind after the evening class, okay? Okay. Okay.